On this week's episode,
Gareth rags on Doctor Who.
Ratings in the UK was shit.
Gareth rags on Doctor Who.
The Sarangan conundrum was shit. And Nige rags on Walking Dead.
The Walking Dead was shit.
If you're feeling upset or a bit depressed, please don't listen to this, because it's not a very positive one. Stay tuned. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, gamers, geezers, geeks, time lords, time ladies, spiders, orange man are bad, zombies and others. Welcome to this week's Monkey Nut Punch podcast. And as with all podcasting journeys, I've got a man who's got, how can I put it, a magnificent beard. It's Nigel. Say hello, Nigel.
Hello. Keith. Keith would argue that his is a magnificent beard. However, he's not here to defend himself, so it looks like bun fluff. Sorry, Keith, but it does.
My argument goes like this. It's attached to his face.
Yes. is attached to his face. We assume it's a beard, but we can't wholly tell.
Could be
leftover food.
It could be a hairy parasitic life form.
Yeah. Seeing as he's never on these podcasts, he can't defend himself, so he's fair game here.
He's only a guest star. We have to remember
that. He's only a guest.
So, this week, we will be talking about Doctor Who, Arachnids in the UK.
Yeah.
And tonight's episode, the Saranga Conundrum, if I've said that right. I couldn't say right. What the fuck's going on there?
You said the difficult word correctly.
Yeah. It's typical. It's like when we record audio together and it's like kind of, oh, no, you screwed up on they.
Yeah, I just said a really difficult dinosaur name perfectly, and you couldn't say the word and.
Yes.
What is wrong with you?
Anyway, so we'll be talking about that, The Walking Dead, and we might have some bits towards the end. So we're in a position where we watched Doctor Who before we recorded the podcast.
Yes.
Which is great, because we had to put it out, we'll be up to scratch.
Up to speed.
The downside is that next week Keith's going to want to talk about these two fucking episodes. So we'll have to go over them again. Annoyingly.
Sorry about that, peeps. In advance.
Yeah. So, first of all, let's talk about Arachnids in the UK. Written by our not-so-talented Chris Chibnall, who can't tell the difference between Doctor Who and Scooby-Doo. This is a weird one, because I watched it and my son wasn't interested in it, and my wife wanted a conversation with me a third of the way through it. So I knew it wasn't a very good one. I was starting to enjoy it, and then it failed the fridge test. Now, I had to explain to Keith on the phone what the fridge test was.
Do explain.
The fridge test is by Alfred Hitchcock, and this is how he describes it. Now, we have to remember, Alfred Hitchcock was a very portly character. So, you watch a film, you'd leave the cinema, yeah, and no matter how crazy the shit that went on during that film was, that you get home, and in the middle of the night, you go down to get yourself a snack. This is Alfred Hitchcock, yeah? And then go, that film was bollocks! And that's the fridge test. If it can last until the day after, you think about it and go, that's bollocks. Good example of this is The Last Jedi. If you watched The Last Jedi, you watched it, and I imagine you walked out for probably the first 45 minutes going, it's okay, but there's something wrong. I can't quite put my finger on it. And then your brain then tells you everything that's wrong with the film. And it was the same with Arachnids in the UK. I watched it, and I enjoyed it. And then I thought about it, and then I was like, oh, it doesn't make any sense. So it's in the same league as fucking The Last Jedi. It starts off with a big empty room with three characters in, which is a metaphor for the entire series of Doctor Who to date. Big empty places occupied by no one. They had their Trump allegory in there, even though they tried to make out that he wasn't Trump.
There was even a line by him claiming that he didn't like Trump along those lines. I hated the fact that they went political with this.
Yeah.
Because immediately, straight from the off, he's an absolute arsehole.
Yeah.
Like, the biggest dick going. And there was stuff that he was saying, which I just turned to the wife and went, have they tried to make this bloke out to sound like Trump?
Yeah.
Because I don't like that. Not the fact that I do or don't like Trump, that's got no bearing on my thoughts. It's a fucking Doctor Who episode. It should be non-political.
Right.
And that's what pissed me off.
See, Doctor Who's was political, but it was more against tyranny and tyrants. Yeah, which fit with Doctor Who saving the world by deposing tyrants. Yeah. And this...
On this occasion, they had one along with them, working alongside them. I say working alongside them, obviously for his own gain and whatnot. But who fucking... I don't know if this actually happens, but who fires someone for turning up to work a day early to make sure that their first day on the job goes smoothly by getting the lay of the land and understanding the job and the place that they're going to be working in? Who fires someone for doing that?
The only time...
Has that ever happened?
The only time I think that would happen is probably in... maybe a security job, like working for the government for like MI6 or something. It's like your security clearance hasn't come through. It comes through tomorrow, then you can start. That's the only exception I can think of off the top of my head.
I mean, I know they probably did that just to make it out that he is an absolute, utter dickhead.
Yeah. Do you know what would have been easier? If there was a dog in the room and he just punched the dog... We'd have gone, oh, he's an arsehole.
Yeah, if the dog come up to him, and sniffing around his leg, and he's fucking kicking at it.
Oh, no, just...
And then
he leans down to
stroke it, and he smacks it one.
Yeah.
You know he's a cunt then.
That would probably work better, but they wanted their little Trump allegory in there, which is annoying, because I wanted a decent spider story. And if anyone has anything about Doctor Who history, there are... sentient spiders that talk. I think they just happened to kill off John Pertwee's doctor. The spiders were secondary. And what they did with the spiders took me really out of the episode when I thought about it. Because it was the first thing that fucked me off. Yeah, was they had a bit where they lured the spiders into a safe room. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So they lured into a safe room and... then they just left the spiders there.
Yes.
To starve to death.
Yes.
Which seems cruel. And if you know the Doctor's rules, never cruel or cowardly, yeah? And that came across as very fucking cruel. Then you had the bit at the end with the giant spider in the ballroom. And I'll let you bring up your problem with the giant spider in the ballroom towards the end. Where the spider is slowly suffocating to death, yeah? And the businessman, I can't remember his name, shoots the spider and puts it out of its misery and gets chastised for doing that. No, let the spider slowly... He did a mercy killing. Yeah? Yeah. And I don't get that.
Robertson.
The Doctor's not a git like that. And Jodie Whittaker's Doctor now is looking a bit cruel.
She, I know they set a precedent there by saying in previous episode with the robots... where no guns, you know, we don't use guns, never use guns, blah, 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 you know. And despite that, he's gone, Call of Duty, yo. And he's gone out and he's shooting like a stormtrooper and he's like, shit, typical Call of Duty player, to be fair. And in this one, she carried that on. And yes, it is so much more crueler to let it suffocate to death. I can only imagine that being pretty painful.
Yeah.
Whether human or creature or whatever. Yeah. And to be fair, Robertson, the businessman.
Yeah.
Yeah. He had the gun, shoot it, kill it, put it out of its misery, etc. But the doctor, like you say, she wanted it to have a slow and painful death. It wasn't being kind, keeping him alive, letting him suffocate. And what I don't get is, why was it suffocating in that absolute massive boardroom?
It's because it grew too big, that the fact that it couldn't pull enough air in because of its size.
Is it exoskeleton? Is that what they were saying?
Well, it was the fact that it got so big it couldn't pull enough air in to maintain its body because of the scaling up. Because you scale in
But it's all scaling.
Scaling. Well,
his lungs is scaling, his legs are scaling, everything's scaling.
Yeah, but...
Surely they can.
Yes and no. It's things don't actually scale up the way you think they do. Yeah, it's like if you scale, they go, oh, a spider's like 8 times stronger than a human. And it's because of its size.
Yes.
Yeah, it's got nothing to do with that, because you scale like it up to our size, it's weaker than us.
Yeah, like an ant. However, if... Yeah.
So
I just imagined its organs, internal organs, was the same. Like, it scaled up alongside with it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's why I thought, well, there's enough room in that room to have a lot of air, because fuck, if they had people turn up for, like, I don't know, a fucking dancing competition or something, everyone would fucking die out of asphyxiation, because there's not enough air in that room, apparently. Brings me to another point with that fucking bath. With the, no, not the bath yet. That's
not the bath thing. Yet, okay.
But the room, the panic room, like you say, locked them in that panic room. Panic rooms typically, you know, have their own air source and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So if there's an air source, there's a grill event or something, you know, whatever. And so they'll escape. I know they'll escape because, well, Big Mama can break her fucking way through into a bathroom through a concrete floor.
Yeah.
And it's not just concrete when they build towers like this, like hotels. They actually build them reinforced with iron bars and a lot, you know? Mm-hmm. But she can break her way through. I guess she's Mother Spider, can break her way through and destroy that. So I'm pretty sure the little spiderlings can get out of that panic room quite easily. Because they showed that the mother one can destroy concrete, which is nuts, because fucking spiders don't try to go through things, do they? They try to go round stuff, climb through them, find a gap, all that sort of stuff. But I just thought it was poor. Oh man,
that
peed me off. And if that guy Robertson was so attached to his phone, like they were alluding to, he would never have put it down on the side when something came up through the floor. It was there right in front of him, right near his hands. The very first thing he would have done is fight or flight. Where's my fucking phone?
Yeah.
You grab your shit, don't you? So, anyway. It wasn't a good episode. And they also, like you mentioned to me, they left those other two spiders out in the wild. In people's houses. And they haven't ever mentioned it.
And they didn't check to see if the people were alive still. They got cocooned.
Yeah. Well, there was nobody in... nobody in Graham's house. Because Grace isn't there anymore. So there's nobody in that house. However, he left it in there. He just ran. And the other house, next door neighbour, to Yaz. I think it's Yaz, isn't it?
Yeah.
her next door neighbour. Yeah, but it didn't check to see if she was alive.
Mm.
They just saw her and went, oh, well, fuck, she's dead. But
yeah, that got me. It's like,
and they didn't even check.
Just check for a pulse, because if they're still alive, cut them down, cut them out.
But no, the thing is, when bother. They went to the under the hotel, what's the first thing they did? Ran over to the things and check if they were alive. Why didn't you do that to your mate?
Mm-hmm.
You don't know this person. You do not know this person, yet you had more care to see if they were alive than your mate that was in her bedroom.
Yeah.
It's a bit fucked.
Yeah, it was... The other thing, too, is I think that Chris Chibnall doesn't like Americans, which is bad for the series, because half of your audience abroad are Americans. They make up the kind of lion's share of it. So pissing them off and painting Americans in a bad light is not a great thing. Just a quick note. I was just having a look on the IMDb.
Yeah.
And Keith would tell me I'm wrong no matter what, yeah? The episodes for Chris Chibnall's series, you got the first one that rated 7.6, then 6.8, then 7.8, then 6.2, and 6.4. But if I go back to the Capaldi era, it's like 8.6, 8.4, 8.4, 8.1,
7.8, 7.7, 7.9.
This is the last season that he did. It's like Sleep No More got 6, which is the lowest of his entire series. So I don't think the international crowd's liking it as much. Keith will go on about the BBC Appreciation Index and the fact that he found an article somewhere written by someone who doesn't know anything, saying one thing and only cites no sources. Because I know he'd do that, and I know we'll do that next week. So I'm just prepping for when he does. And also, I know he won't listen to this. So I've got the opportunity to get out ahead of him. So next week, when he starts going on about it, and I go, these episodes are rating low on IMDb, I'll check Rotten Tomatoes in a bit.
Well, just to give you an idea, I've only got 3 episodes so far of that's on Wiki. The amount of UK viewers in millions... The first one, 10.96. You'd expect that with a new doctor, see how she gets on.
Yeah.
Next one, only 9 million. So you've dropped nearly 2 million.
This is where Keith will go, viewers. No, there's some figures that exist in a quantum state that don't. Something. Yeah.
And Rosa got 8.41. Didn't drop as much. You know, people kept with it. And they haven't published the amount of viewers for Arachnid in the UK yet.
Mm.
I can only imagine it's not as much.
Imagine it's about 6-something.
Yeah.
I reckon they'll pick up towards the end. But it'll be 6-something.
Oh, there you go. 6.43 million overnight. Which was the second highest overnight viewership for the evening.
Yeah.
But still, yeah, waiting to see what it actually comes up with, because obviously people watch it on catch up and all that sort of stuff. So,
yeah. I was just looking at the Rotten Tomatoes thing, and it's like kind of 91% fresh. And then I checked the reviewers, and there are 23 reviewers.
That's not many, is it?
You go to IMDb, and it's like... 4,000, 3,000, 2,000, 1,000. Yeah. Yeah. Oh. Yeah, this series isn't going down too well. And it still had the there is no one alive in the world apart from your cast. You got that very isolated, locked in feeling.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's too early to move across to the next episode that we watched just tonight.
Which is the Sarangan Conundrum, if I said that right.
Yeah, Sarangan Conundrum. It felt very much the same.
They had a reason
they're in
for
they're in an isolated sort of area. They didn't even say what they were fucking looking for. to start the episode off. They were looking for something, and that something has been found by the doctor on many occasions before, whatever they were looking for. But hey, I thought that was actually going to lead somewhere, but no. It was nothing. And she sees a bomb. She goes, oh, it's a sonic bomb. Fuck. Yeah, don't move. Stand right next to it. It's a fucking bomb. What?
Yeah, there was no run or anything.
There was no shit. Get out of here. None of that. Purely to set up the rest of the episode. I mean, it started shit. And then they had this thing, which they've given it all the characteristics of something that just cannot ever be killed.
The weird gremlin creature.
Although, to be fair, my wife went, oh, the gremlin thing looks so cute. Even when he bared his teeth.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, oh, look, he's baring his teeth. Oh, could you go? You know?
Yeah.
Had no menace about it at all. Not even like a gremlin.
It reminded me of the, what's the thing in Futurama that wears a nappy and a red cape? Nibbler.
Nibbler.
And it goes around eating everything.
Yes.
It looked like it ripped off Nibbler.
Yeah, it did. Clearly ripped him off. And even the nuclear bomb that they took out of the whatever reactor destroyed.
Oh. So did you get a sense of they should have dropped it off on the junk planet so it could have eaten all that junk? That's look like what we were setting up for. It's like, if we drop it on the junk planet, it's got food for life, for several lifetimes.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's like it's propelling itself. It propelled itself to get itself onto the ship.
Yeah.
So it's propelled itself through space somehow. Somehow there's no atmosphere. I don't know how it managed to propel itself through space with nothing else around it onto the ship. They just said it arrived. It was, oh, something's arrived.
Yeah,
it's inside.
Very convenient, lazy writing.
How did he do that? When you see him, it's like, what, fart power?
Yeah.
What? They didn't... Okay. Well, whatever. They've got to deal with this indestructible little gremlin beast nibbler thing. Although, to be fair to Jodie Whittaker, I do like her doctor. I just feel it's so unfortunate that the writing is so, so lazy.
Yeah.
And the story isn't that great. What did you think of the male baby man?
I just thought it was just
chucked in there to be a bit...
It was just an unnecessary thing. It was felt really unnecessary. I would have preferred a character of sort, maybe a criminal. Throw a criminal on there, that might have made it a bit more interesting.
Something. They just added him in to have a little bit of drama so we could get a pregnancy and shit like that in there. And had a little bit of a time constraint, as it were. So it sort of coincides with each other. You've got to deal with two things.
It was to do the someone dies, someone's born balance shit that people do every so often. That's what that was.
Okay. Never thought of it like that. But
yeah.
Maybe they chucked it in there because they thought maybe it might bring Graham and Ryan. Is it Ryan? A bit closer.
Yeah.
And yet again, Ryan snubbed his, fist bump.
Yeah, he's going to do it.
And went, no. Ryan, you're a cock, mate.
What do you call it? I found it really weird when it was like kind of, oh, you have to cut them open. Yeah, and it was like kind of, shouldn't they just be able to pop it out unaided? The baby, that is.
If it's that if species. It's
species, yeah. And it's completely natural, then evolution would have found a way of them to
yes.
pop it out.
But they didn't know, like, how are we going to make a man have a baby? Well, we need to cut it out of him. But, right. Evolution, man.
That's yeah.
Evolution.
That bugged me. Yeah, that bugged me because it was incongruous, if I fucking use that
again,
term.
Again, it was lazy because they didn't think about it. They didn't think of the consequence and they went ahead with it anyway. We need to have this in. Okay. Why? Because
the design of the spaceship corridors looked really nice.
Yeah.
And the alien creature was well animated.
It was. He looked pretty cool.
I'm trying to think of nice things to say. The spiders looked good last week too.
The spiders did look good.
But
given that, they really did look good.
But it was like kind of there was a bit where my wife was watching it and she knows, she's been listening to me whinge about the fact that there doesn't seem to be any extras, like they've blown their money so they can't afford extras. And
graphics.
Yeah, not even graphics, they haven't got that much stuff to fucking animate in comparison to previous series.
Yeah.
It's the bit where the Doctor runs into the thingy and goes, there's no crew, and Tanith goes, oh, that's surprising. Yeah, because you'd have had to have paid them, wouldn't you?
It's all automated and controlled from the central point where we're going now, in a windy route. Okay. They didn't even contact them to say, we've got this issue, we're going to do this. They come up with some fucking wishy-washy thing. And all, there wasn't even, like, a person, because they kept sending an alert saying, we think something's wrong. And she kept swiping it off. She goes, oh, strike one, strike two. You know, it was just an alert on the screen. It wasn't an actual human at the place that they were going to, the station that they were going to. Like, even appearing on the screen, like a video call. Or even phone. Or
Not
phone, but voice. Wasn't even that level of human interaction wasn't there.
Yeah, it's like, for God's sake, stop trying to blow us up. We're trying to sort something out. We'll just Skype them.
Yeah, just Skype, man. And when they arrived, it was literally in the same place again, same room, and them going, yeah, they've agreed to, beam you to your ship.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Who's they? We've been talking about this fabled place that you always head to. Some bloke's done 27 revolutions or cycles around this route, and some reason you've taken a different route this time. That's all he said. I've done 27 cycles, and this is the first time we've done this route. For some reason, it's a different route. It's one of those again. So why? Oh, just because. Okay, just because it moves the plot along. There's no background. It's not believable. I know fucking Doctor Who isn't believable anyway, because we're talking about a fictional fucking programme.
Yeah.
But it's meant to be in the realms of, it's in the background of Doctor Who is working somewhere, could be happening, because everything is fairly realistic and logical as to way things happen, and the normal people will never know about it.
Yeah.
And that's what made Doctor Who a little bit special. However, this doesn't.
I don't know. This
I have noticed something, though.
What?
Next episode,
yeah,
is called Demons of the Punjab,
yeah,
and is written by Vinay Patel, not Chris Chibnall.
So it might get a good one.
It might be okay. Apparently, it's I saw a little clip of it, and it was regarding Oh God, what's her name?
Yaz.
Yaz. Yeah, Yaz's ancestor. Mm. Or great grandma, or whatever. Who knows? But it's in the 40s. Late 40s.
Yeah.
Again. Yeah. So, back to that here. My wife saw them riding on a horse and cart. She goes, oh, I like it when they go back in time a bit. And that's all they showed. And then they showed a little bit more. And it's like, oh, we've gone back to 1947. She went, oh, it's not that far back in time then.
Go back to Victorian era, please.
Yeah, yeah, she was hoping for something a little bit, you know, further back. 1066 or something, you know?
Yeah.
But again, like you said, even though they're telling you there's a whole lot more out there, they never actually show it.
Yeah.
They're showing the flight commander with whatever heart problem she's got. She gets too much adrenaline from flying a plane or whatever.
Yeah, she's not even... And the funny thing is she's not even in the plane. She pilots remotely.
You pilot remotely. And they didn't even explain what her thing is. You had to put two and two together. You just sort of had to go... So she gets too excited doing it and it's too much for her heart, so therefore bad for her and she'll get a heart attack. Is that basically what it is? I think they called it pilot's heart or something. Is that?
Yeah, that's just...
And again, they didn't explain anything, but they expected you just to say something and you go, oh, well, yeah.
Well. Okay, let me just give you an example of stuff from Doctor Who, yeah? If I turn around and said, slaughter crystal, yeah? What do you think?
It's a crystal that you use to slaughter things.
You would be 100% correct. There was an audio book that they did Big Finish for the 50th, and they had, what was it, Monty Python and Noble, Catherine Tate do the reading for it. And they had these things on the planet called slaughter crystals. And as soon as they said slaughter crystals, it was like, oh, one of the most dangerous chemical substances in the universe. That's why they call them slaughter crystals. You know, one little touch and it's game over. Yeah. Mm. Makes perfect sense. But it's like pilot's heart. It's like, what's pilot's heart? Is it like the Mile High Club? You fall in love, though.
They didn't really. They didn't really explain what that entails.
I probably have more thoughts about it during the week, and then I can assault Keith when he talks about it next week. But
after Keith's read all the articles that he needs to read gathers his opinions on that,
I have to work out which opinion he's parroting rather than his own.
It was a bit underwhelming because yet again, they painted this picture of the universe being quite big and there being various species, you know, about. But again, there was nobody in the set. Yeah. There was a few people. Yeah. You got the four plus pilot, android, pilot's sibling, two doctors, and matey boy. Who's having a baby?
Which is just fucking weird.
Which is that's six people.
Yeah.
So that's 10 people in total throughout the entire episode. And it was probably maybe it's a thing that they're trying. Maybe every episode can't have any more than 10 people in it.
I don't know. Oh, you want something funny? We've had a Doctor Who Christmas special since 2005.
There's not one this year, is there?
No, there's not one. Do you know why? Apparently they've run out of ideas.
Well, it's got here on the Wikipedia. Episode 287. To TBA name. Wayne Yip is the director. And it's 25th of December.
Yeah.
Maybe that's just, I don't know.
I don't know. It's, there isn't one for December, though. They were thinking they might get one out for New Year's, but I don't know. And if one of the chief thing is that they're running out of ideas, yeah, it's, how can I put it? It's worrying, deeply worrying. Because it's like, Moffat never ever said he was running out of ideas. Russell T. Davis never said he was running out of ideas. John Nathan Turner, who had it for the fucking longest time ever, who ran it for like, I think it was like 12 years from the old Who series, never said he was running out of ideas. Right. Yeah. I don't get it. It's, I know he didn't want to write the last Christmas special. So Moffat wrote that. So I don't know. So it's weird because if you look at season 11, the first episode's Moffat's one. Which is Twice Upon a Time. It's shit. I declare it shit. Doctor Who's gone shit. I mean, really shit. Before it was questionable, but with Moffat's writing, you get like a gem in there every so often. Something you go, wow, that was actually really clever.
Yeah, but there were some clever ones, wasn't there?
There were some clever ones. It was like...
But each episode so far, this series has been written, bar one, Rosa, was written, that was co-wrote with Mallory Blackman. The rest of them were just Chris Chibnall.
Yeah.
Maybe he felt that previous series where he's been working on them, he hasn't had in many of his ideas and many of his episodes shown, put into practice. And now he's a showrunner. He's like, mine, 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 mine. And now people are like going, yeah, this is probably the reason why your episodes weren't shown, because it weren't up to scratch.
The other thing too is he doesn't come across as a very confident kind of writer. Because, like, Russell T. Davis had Stephen Moffat, who he knew was a quality writer. That's why he took over the show when he left. He went, I've got someone in there. Stephen Moffat had loads of people working for him who were absolutely fucking brilliant. One of my favourite episodes is... Oh, where is it? It's called Flatline. Did you ever watch Flatline?
Possibly.
Flatline's the one where the TARDIS keeps shrinking. And these two-dimensional creatures are trying to kill them.
Right.
Yeah. So it starts off, they land, and the door's shrunk. So they step out of this tiny TARDIS in the middle of, I can't remember, it was like Hull or somewhere like that. And then the Doctor gets trapped in the TARDIS because he can't get out. So Clara's left to her own devices, yeah, and all he can do is open up this tiny TARDIS and poke his hand through and hand her stuff. So you can see what's going.
I think I remember. Was that Matt?
No, that was Peter Capaldi for that one.
That was Capaldi. I must have seen that one. I think I remember. Try and figure it out.
That was a really good. That one was really good, and that was written by, I can't remember. It was written by a guy called Jamie Matheson. That's why. A guy called Jamie Matheson, and you know, and then there was The Mummy on the Orient Express, which I loved, which was written by a guy called Jamie Matheson again. Who's one of the guys I'd wish would come back, because he actually is a good writer. I don't think Chris Chibnall was a good writer. I don't think he's got a good set of writing staff. Shouldn't have chucked out half the people he did. Moffat kept people from Russell T. Davis's era that he'd worked with. I can't see this going down very well, because I'm not interested anymore. I'm done with it.
When my kids got home today, we were halfway through watching the episode, and my younger one said, "Oh, you're watching Doctor Who without me." I went, "Yeah, I didn't think you were interested." I said, "Well, I'm recording it. You can watch it tomorrow. So he'll get home from school and he can watch it. You know, I'm not going to watch it again, but he can watch it without me."
Yeah.
And see what he thinks. I'll get my son's view on it.
Yeah.
See if he thinks it's all right. Who knows?
Yeah.
He might love it.
He might love it. But my son and my wife weren't interested in it. And they weren't interested in last week's episode either. And it's really weird because they tell me, I like Jodie Whittaker. And it's like, I like Jodie Whittaker too. I think she's been handed a fucking crap set of stories to contend with.
Yeah, I think she's brilliant. I like her. I don't mind the companions at all. I think Graham has some great lines, to be fair. He's the comic outlet, I say, Graham. But, you know, it would be because that's Bradley Walsh, is it?
It's Bradley Walsh.
Bradley Walsh, yeah. That is his name. Yeah. And I think Yaz is good and Ryan's good, although I think he's a bit of a dickhead towards Graham, probably because I like Graham. But, yeah. And even though they're going through all this shit together, he's still a dick towards Graham. And I don't think people would still be a dick towards Graham. And they haven't actually told us why he's a dick towards Graham. What's the reason behind that?
It's not like a huge dick towards him. He's just an occasional dick towards him.
Yeah.
So, okay. Right. Go on. Have you got anything else to add?
Not on this. I'd like to talk about Walking Dead.
Yeah. My prediction last week was that Brick was going to fall in the river and get washed out to sea. I predicted it during a storm, but now it looks like it's going to be crushed under the weight of like 1,000 zombies. So I'm not a million miles away.
And I said I thought Rick would go out, in a pathetic way. Because, you know. I don't know if anyone else felt that Rick should go out in a epic way. Down fighting. But I was saying to you, earlier, it's weird because the horse, they've even written the horse to behave slightly off character to further a plot, because the horse is very casually trotting through the forest away from the walkers, and then he gets onto the road and he stops, and there are walkers coming at him, fucking thousands of them, apparently. And the horse just stood there going, yeah, whatevs, mate. Rick gets on him, and he's walking. He's so used to, you know, he's so used to the walkers. And he gets to the crossroad, and as he gets to the middle of the crossroad, and I mean the middle, he sees more. And suddenly the horse is spooked. The horse isn't wearing blinkers. He hasn't turned his head and, like, it's suddenly come into his view and something's there and it scared him.
Yeah.
He's not wearing blinkers.
It's more the fact that it goes like this, yeah. He gets to the crossroads. The horse is startled, yeah.
By something it could see a long time.
And
yeah.
Then, it's not that bit, it's the fact that, and then the horse remains where it is rather than fucking off at high speed.
Yeah.
Which is what you'd expect the animal to do.
If it was startled, it would have reared up and gone, "Whoa, fuck this, mate! I'm out." And it would leg it. It didn't.
No.
They've wrote the horse to do something out of character of the horse, because the horse is just stood there going, "I'm all right with this. I'm not so fast." But what I said, I immediately saw it, and he said, it's a crossroads. There's fucking 4 entry points to that crossroad.
Yeah.
He's gone to turn left, and he's gone, oh, fuck, there's zombies. Oh, wait a minute, the horse is, thrown off, and I'm impaled. I don't get why he didn't just carry on going straight. Or right, whichever one takes him furthest away from, you know, the places that they're trying to take them away from.
Yeah.
It's
dumb. And what we got next week, yeah, is we're going to have the
Rick saving himself.
It's the Rick flashback episode. You know when you get those episodes of TV where they've run out of money, so what they do is they just have a clip show from previous episodes. Very big in the 80s. They just...
I think they, yeah, they showed some of that, didn't they? They showed a bit of that. But they did show Rick riding the horse back to wherever he's going.
Yeah, yeah, because naturally we want you to replay all the fucking bits that we've already seen. We don't need to replay.
Well, he looked like he was injured. He was yeah, I know. No, so he's got himself free somehow, no, it's, considering he was passing out.
It's what you call it. It's just he's riding along and he's just thinking about these things, and we're just getting a replay of all this shit.
It's going to be the entire episode, isn't it?
That's what we're going to get for the entire episode. Nothing new, no threat or something, yeah? Not. It should have been the case that the horse was spooked, yeah? He's pinned to the thing, and then he hears... Now. Yeah? The zombies speak and freaking the fuck out.
Yeah.
That would have been good. And then you would have had the whisperers heard him, heard the zombies and him towards the bridge to get him. Because they figure if they take him out, then the others will be weaker. Makes sense. Yes.
That makes sense.
That would have been much more exciting. And he would have shit himself. Zombies have started talking. We're in the crap. But no. We're getting incy wincy spider Rick.
Ah. Now, right? If they were closing in on him, and he was at the crossroads on the horse, and he heard the... Go right or something, yeah?
Yeah.
Rick would have been freaked out, and because Rick is freaked out because they're talking,
yeah.
He would have been like fucking all over the place on the horse going, what the fuck was, you know? And that would have probably startled the horse because he's pulling left and right and he's going, what the fuck was, you know? And probably have reared the horse up and that to happen. I'm clutching because I couldn't see, I'm clutching at straws because I couldn't see what actually startled the horse, because they were actually quite far away at the time of startle. Also, the other thing of the episode that we discussed before was the whole Maggie is going to Alexandra to finish off Negan. And Rick finding out and putting the call in to say, stop her getting in, blah, 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 can you checkpoints and all. And they're all like, yeah, that message ain't getting anywhere.
Oh, yeah, we got that to contend with because she wants and to kill Negan. That. And it's like, oh, do we give a shit? Nah, not Negan. Really.
Couldn't give a fuck now. Negan should have died. Yeah, I'm with Dal. Negan should have died. And Rick's argument was he'll become a martyr. It's like, how will he become a martyr?
Yeah.
And Dal literally said what everyone else is saying, and I'm glad they did that. Was you keeping him alive gives them hope.
Yeah.
Because he's alive, the saviors are going to carry on behaving the way they were with Negan, but in a lesser extent, and that's true. Because look at what they did. They started attacking the camp. And there were gunshots while Dal and Rick were figuring out how to get out of the massive hole that someone's randomly dug. And yeah, they had an understanding. They came to an understanding. Great, if that's what it took. Maybe he will kill off Negan. But I think they're gearing up for Maggie to get there. And trying to kill Negan, gets stopped, cage gets opened, Negan escapes. Somewhere along the line, Rick dies. Chaos ensues, Negan's in charge, and then that's it, Negan's rule.
Yeah.
Xavier's back in charge. Do you think it's going to go that way?
I fucking hope not. It probably will, because they're just... The only writer lazier than them is
Chibnall.
Chibnall. So, yeah.
Yeah. They've been churning out some tat on Walking Dead, and I'm frustrated because I really like Walking Dead.
Yeah.
It's the only reason why I'm a bit down on it, because it set such high standard from the first season It was fairly consistent for, what, 5 seasons?
Mm.
6 seasons, maybe? Don't know what season we're in now.
Yeah.
7, 8? Anyway.
12. Might be 12, I can't remember. It's,
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Quite far.
This is the problem when we record late at night. It's like running out of energy really quickly. Did you want to talk about the first quickly?
Yeah, I'll have a quick chat about the first.
Because just to point out,
season 9.
Keith has watched this already.
He has.
And he's described it as utter bollocks. It's nothing. He wanted a science fiction thing based around the first flight to Mars. And
the
he got a family drama.
In the States, I understand it's probably all been released.
Yeah.
Probably. In September. At the same time. I think it was like a binge thing. I've had a look here on my Skybox, and I've only got one episode, and it's coming out every week. So I've only seen one episode so far. Which is fine. I didn't mind the first episode. It sort of built character. At first you thought I think they called him General at some point. I don't know. But he's come across as a bit of a dick. But he looked fairly handy because he was fixing shit around his house and whatnot. Whatever. And he phoned the astronauts. So as soon as the astronauts were in the shuttle to go, he put a call in, and I'm guessing it's Houston or Kennedy Space Center, wherever, have said, yeah, we'll put you through. We'll grant your request. And I think, well, okay, so he knows these guys. And he must have trained them. But for some reason, he's there and he doesn't really want to know much about it. Something's happened there. And they haven't shown that. Here's a cool, nice moment, blah, blah, blah. All the best luck on your trip to Mars. And they're counting down. And I turned to my wife and said, I bet the fucking on takeoff it blows up. What happens? On takeoff it blows up. And it's all a fallout from that. In this first episode. And it was mostly around, he literally gets in his car from his house and he races to the takeoff point, because obviously it lives nearby. And he goes there, sorts out the fucking place where they were meant, where the families were watching the first shuttle go up. And then they were going to go to a place afterwards, a little, not a conference room, but something like that. And as a celebration for them going up in space and all that sort of stuff. And he goes in there, starts telling people, take fucking the celebration bits down, make it a plain room so you're not upsetting people and all that sort of stuff. And starts being a bit of a counsellor towards these families that have literally just watched their sons and daughters blown to shit.
Mm.
And I thought that was fairly, fairly decent. And then he's trying to get in the ear of the CEO who seemed more preoccupied with talking to the team. She goes, they show her going, I need to do this first. And she goes into a room and you think, oh, she's going to talk to the families who've just lost their loved ones. No, she goes into a room where the team of scientists and engineers have been watching, the control room or whatever, and talks to them and seems really emotional talking to them. But then she won't go and talk to the families. And you think, what? Why have you done that? She does eventually, because matey boy, the general bloke, he goes over and tells her, you need to do this. And they're really angry, you know, all that sort of shit. And then out of nowhere, there comes this drug-addicted teen daughter who's turned up at this guy's house. And if that's the start of what it's all going to be all about, then the next couple of episodes will tell me that. And if it is all about that, and not about the mission to Mars, and them cobbling together, well, not cobbling together, but rebuilding and retraining all the astronauts and all the training and simulations and scenarios and all that sort of stuff, and them doing all of that again to get to back to the same point as where they were before, but better without blood explosions. Then, if it's just going to be about him reconnecting with the daughter for 5 episodes, then I'm not interested. Yeah. But if it's all about the sciencey bit, and you know, the Mars mission and all that sort of stuff, I'm a bit more interested. So time will tell for me, because I can only see one episode every week at the moment.
Okay,
it may not be for you, but
heard Keith review it, and
you know, Keith, you don't often agree with what Keith says.
Yeah, well, if I'm expecting something about a manned trip to Mars, I expect something about a manned trip to Mars, not something about someone's drug addict daughter. And if you know anything about NASA's space protocols, if your son gets the flu, you don't fly. You could be fine, but you don't fly. Yeah, so the drug addict daughter wouldn't pass under a psych thing.
Well, he's not. Yeah, he isn't part. He was a trainer. So he was the person who wasn't flying was the trainer, and the trainer is the person who had the drug addicted daughter.
Yeah, but he wouldn't make it. You have to understand, they'd have hundreds of people applying for this position. Remember Independence Day, Will Smith, qualified pilot.
They showed him as an astronaut in the past.
Yeah.
So I think maybe when the kid was like a baby.
Yeah.
So she wouldn't have been a...
Yeah, I know, but I'm talking about now. He wouldn't get on the program.
Well, maybe that's the reason why he's not in the program, because they were saying, why are you here? It says, you shouldn't be here. Why are you here?
Yeah.
It could well be that.
Anyway, I think you're going to get to the end of it. That's a lot of bollocks.
Maybe. I'll watch some more.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping it doesn't turn into a family drama. And
No, it is a family drama, Nige. It's got nothing to do with Mars. You get that in the last 15 minutes of the last episode.
I'll see, I'll let you know.
Watch it, but you'll get there and you'll go, bastard.
Well, I needed something new to watch, because I'm still waiting for Game of Thrones to come back. And it was meant to be back this year. I'm sure it was. But, yeah, I'll watch it. I'll carry on watching it with the missus, and we'll see. I'll let you know. I'll report back.
Okay. All right. Let's wrap this bastard up, because I'm tired.
It's tiring.
It's tired. If we'd done it during the middle of the day, I'd have a bit more energy, but doing this late at night, it's crazy, yeah. And we've got nothing positive to talk about, that's the problem.
I really don't like ragging on programmes that I usually enjoy.
Doctor Who's turned into a shit show, and The Walking Dead's got boring.
Yeah.
I think the case of The Walking Dead is they're riding it until the wheels come off, which will be not this season, but next season.
Yeah. I think their ratings will continue to decline.
We'll hear at the end of the first half of the next series. Then they'll sit there and say, "This is the end of The Walking Dead for the next 6 episodes." And it'll be shockingly crap still. So
yeah,
that's how I think that's going down. Right, I'm done. I'm dusted. I'm gonna go to bed. I'm gonna say goodbye, Nige.
Goodbye, Nige.
And we will see you in the next podcast.
Bye-bye.
For downloading the Monkey Nut Punch podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Monkey Nut Punch. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/monkeynutpunch.